From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour will be made on Tuesday, November 3rd, when voters go to the polls. And in Monroe County, they will be doing something that hasn't happened in 12 years. They'll be electing a new county executive. The current county executive, Maggie Brooks, is term limited after being elected 3 times. That means that sometime late the night of November 3rd, or God help us, at a later date, we will know the next county executive, whether it will be a Republican, Cheryl Donolfo, the Green Party candidate, Rajesh Barnabas, or my guest for this hour, Democrat Sandra Frankel. Now, in several weeks, WXXI will help host a Voice of the Voter debate, including all 3 candidates. Here on Connections, we're going to talk to the candidates separately, as we did over the summer. It's another chance for you to hear them directly, and later this hour, we'll take some of your questions and comments as well. So let me welcome back to the program Sandy Frankel, the Democrat running for Monroe County Executive. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to be here.
Well, thank you for being here, and I want to start right with the most recent press commentary on the race, and I know you've seen it, came from the Democrat and Chronicle in an editorial over the weekend in a piece that their editorial staff wrote entitled "Donolfo and Frankel, How About a Campaign of Substance?" And the editorial criticized the Republican, Cheryl Donolfo, for being, in their mind, largely absent, that she hasn't really had a whole lot to say publicly in terms of media commentary, attending forums, etc. And then the Democrat and Chronicle's weekend editorial said this: "Ms. Frankel, we know it isn't easy to get people to remain in the bleachers when it looks like the other team is never going to show up. But as you're sending out daily news releases offering recycled solutions for old issues, or emailing reporters because you are wondering if Ms. Donolfo might be a climate change doubter, you are not really doing the voters a favor either. We think fresh and relevant ideas might make people want to read the one-sided stories we write about you." What did you make of that?
I agree with them that my opponent has not stood up to talk about issues that have occurred over her 12 years in office, when there were issues of corruption, scandal, abuse, and waste. But she also hasn't engaged in this campaign and hasn't talked about issues like violence, poverty, economic development and the creation of jobs, child care. Those are issues that are important today, and they're longstanding issues, which is why we're addressing them. Had they been addressed adequately by the current Republican regime over the past 12 years, we wouldn't need to be revisiting them today. But we do, because they are compelling, pressing problems that this community must address and needs to work together on solving. So to bring those issues up now really matters to the people. And, you know, I've been out in the community for months, meeting with residents, talking with folks throughout the community, and on their minds are those very issues: the need to create jobs, good-paying jobs, job training and retraining for people who are unemployed and underemployed, the desperate need for restoring funding for income-eligible families for child care, not only so that the children can have a much better opportunity for success in school, but also to keep their parents in the workforce. The county says they want to keep people working. They want them to be in good jobs. But when you cut funding for child care, then those parents often lose their jobs. That's counterproductive. And so when we look at the various issues, in addition, the condition of our environment, climate change, there are matters that are very serious. And so it is important to talk about those, to propose ideas for solutions. And, you know, these problems have been out there for a long time. They're not going to be solved overnight. But if we don't come together and come up with a good plan for addressing these problems, they're going to persist. My campaign, my platform, has been focusing on the current needs so that we have an approach over the long term that really provides smart investments that will save money down the line.
Now, did you think it was unfair for them to say that your ideas were sort of recycled and based on old issues? Was that unfair?
old issues are current issues, and the ideas that I put out are new issues, new proposals, new ideas, and some building on ideas that have been put forward in the past that were simply never implemented. Had they been implemented, I think we would have seen a positive change. That hasn't happened. So it's not really relevant to throw out the baby with the bathwater. If you've got some good ideas that other people have developed over time, let's use them, but also let's create new approaches that are relevant for today.
Sandra Frankel is my guest for the hour. She's running for Monroe County Executive. She's the Democrat in the race. And recently you did attend a public forum on climate change put together by the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. You put out a statement afterwards saying that Cheryl Donolfo boycotted it. And my understanding is that she indicated to the forum, the people who organized it, that she was simply unavailable that night. And I want to know if you have a reason to say that she boycotted. Is that unfair?
I would say that the Republicans boycotted that forum.
There was one Republican there.
He was a write-in, and he was the only one who came. All of the other Republican candidates stayed away, and actually Susan Spencer, who moderated, made that very point, that they invited all candidates from all parties, and most all, except for that one Republican who is a write-in, refused to attend.
But do you know that she was available and simply chose not to go?
I don't have a clue what her schedule or life is like.
Okay.
So
I
don't know.
You've also indicated that you think she might be a climate change denier, and I haven't had a conversation with Cheryl Donolfo about that. Have you?
I hope she's not. I do know that information that was shared that night indicated that the majority of Republicans, not all by any means, but the majority don't believe that climate change really is a result of human actions, and that the majority of Democrats do. They accept the results of scientists from around the world who have documented real climate change and the relevant connection between human activity just over the last several decades.
All right. So I'm bringing this up for some of our listeners might be saying, why are you asking a county executive candidate about climate change? And there's a reason here. And first of all, I think it is fair to say then we don't know Cheryl Donolfo's position on climate change. She did not attend that forum. I haven't asked her. We don't know. And we'll ask her on a future conversation. But on the question of why it's relevant, we had a recent conversation about what local communities are starting to do, Vancouver, Portland, a number of other cities, state level. And it's not about sort of country-to-country climate policy. It's about mitigation or adaptation at the local level. So, Sandra Frankel, if you're county executive, let's be specific. I know you view climate change as a problem. What can Monroe County's government do about it?
There are a lot of things that we can do here in Monroe County at a governmental level, within our homes, and in our businesses and institutions. As supervisor of the town of Brighton for 20 years, I initiated a Green Brighton task force that included stakeholders from across the community, a real cross-section, to develop a plan of action for the community, which we then implemented. And we were able to begin to reduce our community's carbon footprint. Within our own buildings, we instituted changes with energy-efficient lighting, with changes that reduced our carbon footprint by having a tree planting program, using local agriculture to reduce the cost of transportation, making the community more walkable, to reduce, again, car transportation, so that people could get to stores, get to the Brighton Farmers Market, get to schools without having to drive. The Color Brighton Green organization launched out of that effort, and we have a permanent sustainability oversight committee to look at policies and ordinances and laws of the town of Brighton that would in fact help us to become more energy efficient. we worked with businesses, and in two instances specifically, I was able to influence those businesses as they were building new structures to explore, and they ultimately used geothermal, which would help their energy efficiency. The installation of solar in homes and in businesses. There are so many things that we can do, not the least of which is providing green space, which helps on the carbon footprint aspect as well. And those are the kinds of things that Monroe County can do. Monroe County can be an advocate and inform people about what they can do, because among the most significant impacts relate to things like street lighting, as well as what people actually do in their homes and businesses. We can make county office facilities more environmentally and energy friendly, but we also need to have the whole community participating. It's not just government. The notion of having a solar panel farm is a good one, and the county has done that. Having energy efficient vehicles, which the county has done, that's a good thing. In my family, we recently leased a Volt so that we could reduce our gasoline consumption. There are there's a plethora of steps that people and government can take, and we all have to work together to keep our planet and our community healthy.
Okay, so those are the specific things, and if you're elected, there will be a specific climate action plan in Monroe County. That's what we're hearing here. When you say you want all parts of the county to be more walkable, you are aware, as much as I love and have worked there, that Henrietta is still in Monroe County. Would you move to expel Henrietta?
That's a silly question. Sorry, Evan, but...
It's the least walkable place that I think I've ever been.
The installation of infrastructure is something that happens countywide along county roads. On town roads, that is the prerogative and the authority of town governments or village governments. But I certainly would encourage municipalities that have not installed sidewalks to take a hard look and see if it's appropriate. In areas that are rural, it isn't really necessarily an appropriate kind of, infrastructure.
That's right.
So you really have to look at the unique characteristics of each area and make those decisions locally. But I can tell you that in Brighton, we did connect the network of sidewalks that existed where there were gaps. And as a result, we see more people walking. Another is bicycling, and to make our county even more bicycle friendly, and whether it's on off-road trails or on our streets, to make those passageways safe and accessible so people can then choose that either for recreation or transportation.
Gotcha. All right. Before we get to phone calls, I want to work through a couple of other issues. And one of them is the question on an anti-violence agenda. And you announced your anti-violence agenda about 4 weeks ago, including some thoughts about firearms in this community. For our listeners who aren't aware, what would you do specifically about firearms?
Gun ownership is protected by the U.S. Constitution, and I respect that. I am not advocating taking guns away from anyone. However, I am very concerned about illegal guns, and that's a problem that we need to be working with through law enforcement and through state and federal agencies as well, because we know that those guns cross state lines, county lines, and it is a law enforcement issue. One of the things that I think is really important is that when guns are sold, transferred to friends or family members, that they be secured in the home, that they be locked or kept, and whether it's with a gun lock or a safe, tightly locked box, that they be kept in that condition so that they're not accessible to children. 50% of gun crimes in schools committed by children, the guns came from the home. And if those guns were locked, that would reduce the potential for real tragedy. So I think we need more education, and we also need to make sure that when guns are transferred, when ownership is transferred, that gun locks be part of what is required. We certainly are not going into individuals' homes to inspect and enforce. This is really a matter of having the information, being knowledgeable, and being responsible.
Now, let's say I don't have kids, and I've got a gun at home simply because I want to protect my family in the case it's ever needed. And I am trained, and I am ready to use it, and I hope I never have to. And you want me to put some kind of a lock on it that if I need to access it quickly, I don't feel like I can access it quickly enough. What would you say to a gun owner who would say, what you are proposing is going to make it more difficult for me to protect myself if I ever need to?
Gun locks, I believe, need to be available, and in a particular home situation, people need to evaluate what their risk exposure is, whether there are children living in the home, whether there are children who come and visit the home. So if you don't have a child in your home and you have a gun that's unlocked, but you have visitors who are bringing children along with them, I would strongly urge that the gun be locked when those visitors are in the home.
You say you're also going to call on the New York State Attorney General to expand the gun buyback program by providing an ongoing gun amnesty program for Monroe County. Remind our listeners how that would work.
The Attorney General provides a gun buyback program for people who no longer want to keep their guns. Excuse me. Sorry about
Water's
that.
Water's right in front of
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
there
I'm
you are.
Get it.
And that's currently in place now.
Yes, it is. But it only happens once or twice a year, I believe. And so I would ask the Attorney General to increase the frequency of that program. It takes place in Brighton. It takes place in the city of Rochester. I'd like to see that program more available and accessible throughout the community.
Mm-hmm. Are you a gun owner?
I'm not. My mother has one. She lives in Florida. But I have had experience when I participated in the employer support of the Guard and Reserve visit to Camp Lejeune, a Marine base. I had the opportunity to be the volunteer, if you will, to try an M16, which I did. And to my surprise, and I had not used a gun before that, I got 3 bullseyes right on the target was of a human image, so right between the eyes. And then following that, I went to the police firing range, the training facility in Monroe County, and again hit the bullseye from not only near, but as far back as you could go. So I discovered that I've got the aptitude, if you will, or the ability. And I can see why people enjoy shooting as a hobby. It's a skill. Because guns are so involved with homicides, with armed robberies, with crime in this community, we also have to take a hard look at background checks and at safety for those weapons that people keep in their homes. And certainly, I personally don't think that automatic weapons are the kind of weapons.
Assault rifle style.
Assault rifles really belong in people's homes.
Okay. Now, it's a little abstract to talk about gun policy from the county level, because again, if Sandra Frankel is elected, or Cheryl Denault is elected, or Rajesh Barnabas is elected, they're not going to come in and by fiat change the way gun policy works. But what she's talking about, again, are education about gun locks and about sort of trying to call on and make the gun buyback program on the state level more available. So adding a county voice to it. But I want to ask one more question on this, and that is the question on buyback not as an option. After the Virginia shooting, where we saw a television reporter and a videographer shot and killed on a live report, and after so many events around the country, mass shootings, we inevitably see people say, well, you know, in Australia, after the 1996 Port Arthur massacre, they instituted a mandatory government-based buyback. So not like, hey, if you don't want your guns, we'll take it. It was, this is the rule. If you own X, Y, and Z, hand it over and we'll pay you for it. And it was essentially a third of the guns in that country. And a lot of people have felt it works, but they also want to clarify. That's essentially confiscation. Why is it that when we look at what works, we don't talk more about that in honest terms? That Harvard's professor who's lurked on this for 25 years came on this program and said, we know that when there are more guns in the community, there will be more gun killings. That's just, it tracks almost perfectly. So why doesn't Sandy Frankel say, hey, Australia did something, and yes, it was basically confiscation, but if it worked, it worked, and maybe we'll try it.
I think that we do have an obligation to honor our Constitution, and our Constitution gives people the right to bear arms. A reduction in the number of guns in the community, given that it tracks with gun violence, is something that we ought to strive for. But I think we have to do it through education, through volunteer efforts, and through programs like the Attorney General has launched. I agree with you that it would be tantamount to confiscation if it were forced.
If it was a mandatory
buyback.
Yes. On the question of taxation, you have put out a number of statements about not only what you'd like to do regarding taxes, but your feelings about what's been going on in this county over the last 12 years regarding taxes. And when you were here before, you said something that struck me, and I want to follow up on it today. You talked about how in Monroe County right now, you're viewing, as the potential county executive, a financial landscape, a fiscal landscape that needs a structural fix long term. And you compare your own experience as the supervisor of the town of Brighton going back to the early 1990s, elected in 1990?
1991. Took office in 1992.
Okay, 1991. 10 terms, by the way, was elected. And you came in, what you said...
And by the way, Brighton was, at the time of election, a Republican majority town.
Okay. And just, so you love
so
saying
it.
I know you love telling that story.
Why not?
And it's a true story.
It is true.
But Sandy's point, I think, on the program back in June was, you viewed similarities. You came into Brighton and there were some problems that needed fixing. And now you're looking at Monroe County and you're saying, I have experience doing this. What you also said was that in Brighton, you raised taxes once. You stabilized, and long term, you worked to do things more efficiently, et cetera, et cetera. And yet you also said, I'm not going to raising taxes is off the table in Monroe County. So what worked for you in Brighton, that's the biggest tool you used, and you're taking it away from yourself in Monroe County. And you didn't have a whole lot of specifics on what else you do to sort of structurally balance and fix it. Do you have more specifics now?
First of all, let me clarify
what
you just said.
If I mischaracterized, then
a
certainly.
A little bit.
Then let's talk
about
that. Okay.
To begin with, when I first came into office as supervisor in 1992, we took a hard look at the budget we had inherited from the prior Republican administration. And we found both a current year budget shortfall as well as a structural budget deficit. And under the law, and as a fiscally responsible and conservative person, it was essential that we close the year in the black. And so we took steps to freeze spending. We eliminated redundant positions. I got rid of the supervisor's car. We did small and big things. We worked with our unions, which were very cooperative, and agreed to freeze their wages with the promise that we'd make that up going forward once we had corrected the financial problems we had inherited. And we eliminated take-home cars for employees who did not have emergency response responsibilities. So across the board, in that first year, we tightened our belts, made hard decisions, and we ended the year in the black.
Did you raise taxes?
In the first year, having inherited the budget from the prior administration, we ended the year in the black. You can't raise taxes in the middle of a tax year, in the middle of a budget year. Going into 1993, which was my first budget, mm-hmm. We also had to deal with a structural budget deficit, which resulted from our predecessors having spent down the fund balance to almost nothing, and our independent auditors warning that if that fund balance wasn't restored, that it would lower our credit rating. And that meant for borrowings, it would cost more because interest rates would be higher. And we also found that our predecessors had used one-time revenue, one-shots, the 1991 FEMA ice storm reimbursement money to cover the cost of ongoing operations in the highway department. And there were other issues that we found as well, but those were some of the principal causes. So we, with all of the belt tightening and the cuts and the freezes that we did, we also raised taxes. And we raised taxes 19.85%. That sounds horrible. But in fact, what it equated to was $82 more for a home valued at $100,000. And when I talked with people in the community about what we had inherited, what we found, and the fixes that we were proposing, my attitude, my thinking was, I wasn't elected to eviscerate the critically important services and programs that the community needed, wanted, depended upon. And as a result of that, we not only passed the budget, but we also earned a Moody's credit rating upgrade to AA2, which is a high-level credit rating upgrade compared with the county's Baa1, which is a lower, much lower credit rating. And we rebuilt the fund balance, and that positioned us to be able to go forward and implement the vision, transform the community based on what residents in the community, the voters, the property taxpayers wanted and needed, because they wanted value for their tax dollars, and that's what I was there to provide.
So what's the difference?
So let me finish, because here comes the correction part.
Okay.
Over the course of the next 19 years, the remaining budgets, and we had a budget every year, the average annual property tax increase was below the average annual rate of inflation, and in fact was lower than half the rate of inflation over that period of time. There were times, five times, when we cut the budget, when we cut taxes five times. And there were times when taxes did go up more as a result of referenda, where the voters actually went to the polls and voted to spend money in order to buy and develop parkland. We didn't have a park system, and they wanted one. In order to build a new library, in order to repair long-neglected sidewalks that had become dangerous. So some of those increases reflected the debt service and operating expenses that went with those particular capital projects that the voters said, yes, we want to be taxed more in order to have those things that are important to our quality of life. So overall, with a fiscally conservative approach to budgeting and finance, and to improving the economic base of the community with development that was important, we were able to expand the tax base and to deliver quality services and programs that really has made Brighton very strong. And when I retired from that position, Brighton was in great shape. So I feel very good about what I had done. When I look at the county and say, where are we going? Right now, we all know that Monroe County is the number one most fiscally stressed county in New York State. We know that its bond rating is low at Baa1. We know that there is waste in a $1 billion budget. And on the one hand, we will take a very hard look at the budget to eliminate contracts and leases for things we don't need, hundreds of thousands of dollars going for parking lots that the county really doesn't need. That's just one little example, but it speaks to how we need to take a different approach with county budgeting to make sure that the priorities reflect the needs of the community. You know, when a family seeks child care subsidies so that the parents can work, and it's an income eligible family. We hear time and again out in the community about families who have been denied child care, saying because the county says that they're broke, that they don't have the money to pay for it. It goes to court. The judge rules that the county indeed has the funds to pay for that, and the families are then given those child care funding subsidies so that they can be in the workforce and work their way out of generational poverty. So I am confident that we are going to be able to make cuts in the budget that are really reflective of waste and benefits to political allies that really aren't benefiting the general public. And we're also going to be working on expanding the tax base through economic development. I'm very excited about the future of this county. I think we're on the cusp of some major strides in terms of increasing job growth and bringing in new business related to the photonics manufacturing hub investments that will be coming from not only the research and the startups, but the development of those businesses that will grow jobs, and not just in that kind of industry, but there'll be a ripple effect throughout the county, from people who are working in unskilled jobs to very high skilled jobs. There'll be a need for more construction work. There'll be a need for and an increase, I think, in restaurants and all of the different service and retail outlets that support a community as it's growing. And that $600 million of private and public investment won't all come here, but a good chunk of it will. And then if we are successful in securing the Upstate Revitalization Initiative funding that will be decided later this year or sometime early next year from New York State, that has the potential for another $500 million
of investment. So that'll help the tax base.
And that will help to create jobs, create new business, attract new business. You know, we've got an enormous resource in our fresh water supply. That'll bring business here that requires that kind of natural resource, but it also may lead to, I'm not sure what the term is, but water migration. People who are living in parts of this country where water is now scarce because of severe drought related to climate change, and if they get tired of living on rationed water, they're going to look for places, and we're going to be one of those places that will become, I think, that shining community on the hill that Reagan envisioned. But I think our future is extremely bright.
Okay, but I'm way late for a break, but I have to follow up and just ask you briefly here. When you talk about you're not going to raise taxes on the county level, won't do it, and I assume that means no other fees or sort of hidden ways to raise taxes, no more new chargebacks, things like that. Is that fair?
My intent is to keep the property tax rate flat and to control and keep the chargebacks flat, because I think we need to look at how we do that and how we prioritize and do it differently. You know, one of the things that really troubles me on the chargebacks has to do with MCC's formula, where each municipality, the city and the West Side towns in particular, are hurt more by the change, which requires their costs, the taxpayer bill is higher on that because they have more students going to MCC.
That's right.
And it really hurts.
So you could change that formula, but you're not going to add new chargebacks.
I think we've got to have everybody tighten their belts and look at smarter, better ways to spend the precious tax dollars that we have in a $1 billion budget. We ought to be able to do that.
If you keep the tax rate 8.99, but you add new chargebacks and you come on this program, I'm going to say to you that you raise taxes. Is that a deal?
That's fair enough. And I'll tell you what, if that happens, I'm going to have a good reason for it.
Okay.
But it's not something that I'm planning on doing.
Okay. And then the last thing before we take this break is this. When you say then you're not going to raise taxes, that the county's credit rating is a problem, that we are fiscally stressed, that we need a long-term, not one-shot-based solution, and what you talk about going that will fix that are a lot of things that are already happening, photonics, things like that. And some of our listeners might say, well, if you're saying that all these great things are already happening, don't we want to kind of keep on keeping on? I thought you said that the current regime is not doing good work and you don't want to honor that by electing the Republican. They should elect you. But what you're saying is things are really good right now, that all of these things are happening, that it's positive. There's positive momentum.
The momentum is not the result of what county government is doing or the result of what county government has done. It is driven by the private sector and by our universities and colleges. The University of Rochester, RIT, Joel Seligman, Danny Wegman, they're leading these initiatives right now. And it is a combination of people coming together from across the community. But the economic development function of county government has really been pretty silent, not very effective. I'm going to strengthen that, and I'm going to be working with the people in our community who are experts and who are invested and knowledgeable about this. So, you know, that means the Rochester Business Alliance. That means the Regional Economic Development Council. It means Greater Rochester Enterprise. It means working with our universities and colleges, because we've got great resources here. We've got great potential. We've got talent in our people, and our arts and cultural community is really recognized as one of the 10 best in the country today. So we've got assets that contribute to economic development. But it's not because of what the current administration has done. This has been a broad-based community effort, which has to continue. And I will have the county as a much more active and involved partner in that initiative.
Would you abolish COMITA?
No. COMITA, the IDA, Industrial Development Agency, can serve a useful purpose in incenting companies to come here, but I would reform it because it needs to be open. It's not. It needs to be more transparent. It needs to be accountable. And for businesses that make promises that they can't keep, there's got to be enforcement. And that really hasn't happened. The other is that there has to be a set of goals and priorities that guide the kinds of investment COMITA makes. Right now, anybody who walks through the door can pretty much get a tax break. And that disadvantages competitors in this community. And there are certain kinds of businesses that don't really need that kind of incentive because they're not going anywhere. A hotel that's here is not going to move to the next county. A law office, a law firm, isn't going to move out of the county when its clients are here. So I believe that COMITA has to be reformed, but shouldn't go away, because it can be a tool that we need to use in bringing businesses here and making our economic development stronger.
Democrat Sandra Frankel is running for Monroe County Executive. We're going to take a 50-second break, and your phone calls are straight ahead on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, you might have seen the recent Wall Street Journal story on sexual assault on campus. New survey finds it could be even more prevalent than first thought. We'll talk to members of local universities and people who have been working on this problem for years about what to do about sexual assault on campus. Then second hour, the flu vaccine this year. Will it work? Why will it be different? Talk to you Tuesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. After the host's final two questions for Sandra Frankel, I'll turn it over to our listeners for the rest of the hour. But a couple of questions. Your campaign released today that both New York senators endorse you in this race. I don't consider it news. They're Democrats. They have to endorse you, don't they? But what about the mayor of Rochester?
I actually met with the mayor of Rochester this morning. We had a great time over coffee. And as she has said before, she is not ready to make any endorsements in this race. She thinks it's too early. And I respect that. That's her prerogative. She made clear that she is not going to be endorsing a Republican. But she doesn't know whether she'll get involved in this race or not. And that's for her to decide.
That has to disappoint you.
I would like to have her endorsement, but quite frankly, I have tremendous grassroots support in this campaign. And that support is in the city as well as throughout the county. And so I'm confident that we are positioned to win in November. Endorsements are great. They make you feel good. But on the other hand, I have a good relationship with the mayor, and whether there's a formal endorsement or not, I know that we'll be able to work together.
Did she indicate why she's not endorsing yet? Because I know you said it's too early. You know, we're about a month away from the election, but did she indicate any other reasons why?
No.
Okay. And then my other question to you is on the question of poverty. And the anti-poverty initiative is something we're going to talk about on this program. They've started to put forward their own recommendations on the county level. Do you view child care? What's the number one thing that the county government can do to help with poverty?
I believe there are three areas where the county can help address issues of poverty. I could add perhaps a fourth, but one is childcare, because we need to increase the number of income-eligible families who receive funding for childcare services so that parents can stay in the workforce. We know that not only do the children have a much higher percentage of success and graduation rates and continuing on to colleges if that's their aptitude and interest. But we also know that parents who are working have a higher productivity rate when their children are in child care, quality child care.
Okay, so that's one.
So that's one. Another is along with economic development and job training. We know that there are vacancies that currently exist in this community and that businesses have said that they can't find people with the relevant skills to do the job. So we need to do a better job of bringing people who are unemployed and underemployed together with those businesses and working with MCC, BOCES, REOC, labor apprenticeships. Mm-hmm. I lost the word for a second there, but labor apprenticeship programs and in-house training that some businesses also provide. That if we get people trained with the skills that are needed by businesses today and also prepare them for the jobs of the future that are going to come with economic development through these grants that we've talked about already, that will help lift people out of poverty.
That's two. And what's three?
A third is working with the arts and cultural community, because we have some very creative people in this community, and there's an opportunity, I think, to expand in that arena, no differently than, you know, when you talk about job training, retraining, not only the optics, imaging, high-tech kinds of areas, but also the food industry, Wegmans is an enormous part of our economy here. There are just tremendous opportunities to get people into new avenues. But we also have to make sure that our kids are well-educated and that parents know what the options are. And while the county doesn't have authority over public education decisions, my background is in education. I'm a former speech-language pathologist who's worked in both educational and healthcare settings. I know a good deal about education, having been a school board leader for 10 years. And I want to work with our schools to the extent that they are amenable to find ways to help get the kids educated and the parents who need to continue their education to get their GEDs so that they are better positioned. So when you look at jobs, childcare, and education, those are the three prongs. Okay. And another is healthcare.
Do it briefly, because I got to get to the phones.
Okay, healthcare. The fact is that in underserved neighborhoods, there are people who are not perhaps educated about what resources are available to them. I worked at the Anthony Jordan Health Center for 8 years through the Hearing and Speech Center contract, and I know what a great job they do. But getting people informed about the importance of preventive care, good nutrition, and early treatment will help not only those individuals be healthier and able to work, but it'll also be better for their families and for our society as a whole. So there are a lot of things we can do.
Okay, well, if I'm coming to the phones, 30 seconds for a question or less, and we'll see if Sandy can do 30 seconds for an answer or less, and we'll get through as many as we can. Let's keep it moving. Frank in Rochester, go. Go ahead, Frank.
Oh, I'm sorry. Recently, the Pope's been in the United States talking about climate change at the White House, in Congress, at the UN. We had the Paris Climate Treaty coming up. I'm looking at the article in the DNC about D'Onofrio and Frangle, how about a campaign of substance? I think there has been. I've heard Sandy talk about climate change many times. The press hasn't really. But at this point in time, if you are a community leader and you are not talking about climate change, I really think you're a climate change denier.
All right. Do you have a
really? Why don't Republicans have to talk about climate change in our region?
All right, Frank, thanks for the phone call. Sandy, 30 seconds. Go ahead.
I would love to hear from my opponent about her views on climate change, and I would hope that she would embrace the reality that climate change is real and that we as a community need to work together to reduce our carbon footprint and keep our environment healthy.
Sandy has said that Cheryl boycotted the forum. I told her I thought that was an uncharitable term. We'll ask Cheryl D'Onofrio on this program the next time we get that chance on her views on that issue. Andrew in Pittsford. Next up with Sandy Frankel. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hi. One of the most important parts of infrastructure these days for businesses and for residents is our internet connections. And I feel Monroe County is underserved by all the companies inside of it, except for a few small fiber startups. Do you have any plans for expanding on fiber internet or internet access for the people?
I think you raise a very good point. Infrastructure is critically important to economic development, to business, and also in our personal lives and in our homes. And so, yes, that is something that I would work to expand.
Okay. Carlene in Rochester. Go ahead, Carlene.
Having been a leader of the town of Brighton for decades, do you feel that you have a special inside connection to the other town leaders in Monroe County in terms of knowing their needs and that maybe they can make serious cost savings working together, that you can approach them in a different way because you know them intimately?
That's a great observation. I do know many of the town supervisors and other officials in the towns and villages as well as in the city, and I have worked to implement shared services that not only were cost effective, but also provided quality results. And I did that with the city of Rochester, with Pittsburgh, with Greece, with Irondequoit. I know there are opportunities for cost savings. We all want to protect our own unique identities in our communities, but that doesn't mean we can't work together to be smarter about how we spend everybody's precious tax dollars and do things more efficiently, cost effectively, with quality, and yet preserving what we value in our quality of life.
All right, 20 seconds. John, go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Hey, Sandy. Sandy, question for you on financial control boards. And to make the county more efficient financially and in better shape, you may want to consider studying what Erie County did and the city of Buffalo did 10 years ago. They went to financial control boards, and they're very successful. Within about 3 or 4 years, the city of Buffalo had a surplus, and I think Erie County also did. And our tax rates here are 30 to 40% higher.
All right, John, I've just got to cut you off to give Sandy 30 seconds. Go ahead, Sandy.
I certainly would look at what Buffalo did, the steps that they took. It is not for the county itself to institute a control board, but we certainly can learn from the steps that they took and benefit from that knowledge.
Now, Wendy writes to the program, when will we have a chance to hear the candidates debate? A Voice of the Voter debate is coming up later in October with Sandy Frankel, Cheryl Donolfo, and Rajesh Barnabas. All three candidates running for county executive. We'll make sure you know about that. And then the other two candidates will be on this program. It is up to them, and I hope the answer is as very, very soon. Later this week, next week, it's going to be an open invitation for Cheryl Donolfo and Rajesh Barnabas, and that will be very soon. And Sandy Frankel says if she wins, she'll be back here plenty as the next county executive, won't you?
You bet. I'm going to have an open government that's transparent, accountable, and accessible, and I will be here as often as you like.
Well, Sandra Frankel, the Democrat running for Monroe County Executive. What's your website, real quick?
SandyFrankel2015.com.
Thanks for taking the time, Sandy. And thanks for listening to Connections right here on member-supported public radio.